Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Christina Schnuckel, Director and Wealth Advisor here at Ellen Becker Investment Group. My guest today is fellow advisor Nick Kabardin. Very excited to have you here today, Nick.
Glad to be here.
We have a really interesting topic today. We're talking about behavioral finance and how that really impacts the investing journey. So one of the things you shared with me that we wanted to talk about today, kind of jumping right in, is this concept of delaying gratification. Share with me what that means to you and how that impacts investors today.
When you think about delayed gratification, you have to think about, do I reward myself now? Or do I set some money aside and wait for it to reward me sometime down the road into the future? So which one do you pick? That's really the best way, I would say, that you want to think about that.
That's human nature. I watch my kids do that of, shall I get that Lego set now, that small one, or save for the larger Lego set? They almost always go for the smaller instant gratification.
Yep. Well, there was a very famous experiment done by a Stanford scientist called the marshmallow experiment. Have you heard of that? So in the gist, what it was is kids age 4 to 5 years old were offered a marshmallow. They were placed in a room and they said, how about I give you a marshmallow now, or I'm going to leave the room and come back and bring you two marshmallows when they return. And they wanted to see which kids will take the marshmallow now versus delay that gratification and look to get two when the researcher came back. So what they found out is kids who ended up delaying the gratification ended up being more successful later in life. They had higher SAT scores. They had better performance in schools. They had better health, and they just ended up making better choices with everything in life. Now, what was interesting is later down the road, back in 2000s and 2010s, that experiment slightly got diluted where they figured out that socioeconomic background for a kid could play a role in the outcome here. So, for example, if a kid doesn't trust the fact that the researcher is going to come back and bring you those two marshmallows, that can feed into the decision of, no, let me have my marshmallow now.
Sure. Bird in the hand or marshmallow in the hand.
Exactly. So it's a really, really big deal kind of thinking about this, right? Do I want to have it now and enjoy it? Because the thing with having that marshmallow now, it's a release of dopamine. So we always get this satisfaction of, you know, if I have this paycheck and here is my $1,000 that I just received, I can go and spend it and get that instant dopamine hit. Versus if I put it away, I didn't really get to enjoy it right now. So I think that's really the biggest struggle with delaying the gratification.
Mm-hmm. Put that into how it relates to investors today.
So I guess if you think about it from an investing point of view, if you have money now, you can go and buy a expensive toy or something that you want. And there's nothing wrong with buying something that you want. But kind of spending everything and not paying yourself, your older self, as I like to say sometimes, right? So how it relates to investing. When you delay the gratification, you do something that's kind of counter human psychology. You avoid that instant dopamine hit and you think about having that money work for you in the long term. You can think about it from the standpoint of, what if I go and look at what happened in the markets over the last year? Oftentimes, people are known for chasing the winners. So how many times have you seen a stock do really, really well and you're at a barbecue party and somebody's talking about, oh, did you see what this stock has done? Or did you see what that stock has done? I know, maybe that's just my parties, but I think that's a pretty frequent conversation where investing
or comparing just general returns too, not even stock specific, but how their overall portfolio has done.
Exactly.
Get a lot of that. Yeah.
So people start having that fear of missing out. When you have that fear of missing out, right, oftentimes referred to as FOMO, you feel like, well, I should have bought that stock. And then you go and you put all your money in, for example, that one stock that has done so well in that 1 year. But not what you don't realize is that you're really exposing yourself to pretty significant downside risk at that point. Because the stock has run up doesn't mean it's going to continue running up. It may, but you're very heavily concentrated in one position and that can backfire really quickly.
Well, even just from not even a specific stock, but from an overall risk standpoint, I've gotten the question twice in the last week with the market doing really well and recovering nicely. Should I be more aggressive? You know, and that sparks a conversation of the downside that's there for clients. And oftentimes my answer is no, you're in the right allocation. You have the right amount of stock for what your goals are, your time horizon, what we're trying to achieve. Mm-hmm. Don't be swayed by this FOMO and exactly. feeling like you should be more aggressive in the market.
Mm-hmm. Another point here is looking at the flip side of things, right? When the markets are really good, it's a happy time. Mm-hmm. But when the markets are not good, that's when people start to panic. And the idea here comes in from the point where, as an investor, you almost expect the good returns to keep coming. So when you have a meeting with your financial advisor, if you have one, or if you look at your portfolio, if you're investing on your own, and you keep seeing those returns that are up, and they're up, 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 and you're pretty happy with yourself, but you don't really go and celebrate it, do you? Versus when you see that big pullback, if you have, and the market always has pullbacks, right? They call it a market cycle for a reason. It goes up, it goes down. It's a certainty that it will go down at some point again. So when you look at the market and you have that pullback of 10%, 15%, that's the one where people start losing sleep over this.
Mm-hmm.
And how many times can a person lose sleep over it and consider, well, should I go into cash? What if this is going to continue going down? So we had a few examples of that over the last few years, right?
Right.
So 2015 was a big year when the markets were down. 2018 was another negative year. More recently, just last year in April, when terrorists first came out in the news, and you know it was very unexpected because we were really expecting maybe smaller scope of terrorists, maybe less countries. And you know, we saw the president come out with a big poster board and having a list of countries. I had to look up where some of those countries were in the map. I mean, it was just a very extensive list
very
of countries, right?
Yeah.
So it was a surprise. It was a market mm-hmm. shock, and nobody expected that to come out. So that's when the market took a pretty significant dip. It was down about 15%. And that's when people start to worry.
Mm-hmm.
So if you were up 15% a year before, you probably didn't think about it. You're like, well, it's doing what it's supposed to do. But once you see it go in the opposite direction, that's where that fear, that loss aversion really starts to kick in.
Yeah. So if we are hardwired for short-term rewards, you know, wanting that marshmallow now, mm-hmm. and it's hard to wait and pay our later selves, is it more about building up our self-control, or is it more about setting up the right habits to help us on that investing journey?
Well, I would say that you got to look at it from the short-term perspective and from the long-term perspective. So if you look at it from the short-term perspective, that instant dopamine hit, how can you find it another way, right? Because as humans, we need some kind of satisfaction in our life. So you can get that instant dopamine hit from going on a walk, from exercising, from playing with your pet, or from spending time with your loved ones. You're still going to get that same amount of satisfaction as if you were to buy the shiny thing. You know, there's I'm a big soccer fan. I absolutely love soccer. And there's a famous quote by one soccer player who said that if you buy a new car, it's going to make you happy for about 3 months. So I went out and I bought 4 new cars because I wanted to be happy for a year. So it's a perfect example of that dopamine hit. Mm-hmm. And it's just find other ways to get satisfaction in life, because it's material thing will likely lose its shine pretty quickly.
Well, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be back more with Talking with Nick on behavioral finance.
Ellenbecker Investment Group is officially launching our brand new program, The Wealth Seed. This program is designed to give you high-quality financial guidance tailored to your stage of saving, no matter your experience level. As part of this program, you'll get a growing library of short, easy-to-understand financial podcasts, monthly educational emails, interactive workshops, and curated tools like book and media recommendations. Plant your wealth seed today and start growing with us at ellenbecker.com/thewealthseed.
Welcome back to Money Sense. I'm Christina Schnuckel, Director and Wealth Advisor at Ellenbecker Investment Group. And I've been talking today with Nick Kibarden, fellow wealth advisor here at Ellenbecker, about behavioral finance. So, Nick, before our break, we were just talking a little bit about this idea of delayed gratification mm-hmm. and how that can impact, for the positive, investing. Yep. But you're a numbers guy, you're a math guy. Like, share with me some of the numbers behind this concept of delayed gratification.
Absolutely. So, you know, we oftentimes when we review our performance results and portfolios and meet with clients, we say, well, you delayed gratification, and this is what it looks like for you today. But when you think about the math behind the scenes, right, there's a very famous quote by Warren Buffett. He calls a compounding interest the eighth wonder of the world. So people have heard this, but it's really hard to kind of wrap your mind around it unless you sit down with a pen and paper, I think, and do some math. So let's take a look at two different people here, and we'll have an example of somebody who invested for 30 years. So we're looking at a time period of 30 years and what delayed gratification means for those two people. Person A chose to invest $500 a month for a period of 10 years. Let's assume a 10% market return here. And after the first 10 years, they completely stop. Then they leave that money invested for the remaining 20 years to get a total time in the market of 30 years. Now, person B chose not to invest for the first 10 years. They really kind of wanted a dopamine hit, right? They wanted the new shiny thing and they spent the money. They did not invest it. They started investing 10 years later. Now, they started contributing the same $500 a month and they did it for double the time, for 20 years. Now you have the same time window, total of 30 years. Here's the crazy part, the part that absolutely blows my mind when I think about these numbers. Person A, who only invested for 10 years, ends up with approximately $750,000 in their portfolio. After only investing for 10 years and letting the money cook, right, at that 10% rate for the next 20. While person B, who invested double the amount of money, just started 10 years later, they invested double amount of money for 20 years, ends up with only approximately $380,000.
Wow.
How crazy is that?
We should be teaching that in school.
I 100% agree with that. Kids. And you know, there are different programs that obviously touch on that. And I highly, highly encourage young people, or if you're a parent or a grandparent and your kids haven't thought about this, this is, I think, education that has to be done at an early age. So, you know, oftentimes you did a segment recently that talked about young kids and how to help them learn money habits. But it's so important to teach that early. You know, it's like you have your birthday, you know, you have your Christmas, you have your Thanksgiving, whatever holiday you may be celebrating, the grandparent brings in some money. It's okay to spend some of it, but set some money aside. Let it grow, let it cook in the market for a long time so you end up like that person A versus the person B. Because it's mind-blowing to think that you invested half the money but ended up with double the return.
Right.
The math is unbelievable.
Well, and that's interesting too, because we get asked questions all the time, in particular from younger investors of, oh, well, I'll start investing after I pay off my student loans. Or we have people who are really passionate about paying off their houses and they want to do that and then say that they're going to start saving, you know, after they do that or whatnot. And what they're missing out on is that time to have all that compounding earning.
Now, when you think about that too, right, from the kind of financial needs pyramid, so to say, yes, there are times when you can invest. Can't argue with the fact that basic life's necessities like shelter and food, there are times in life that people can go through a hard time, right? So it's totally understandable that basic needs need to be done first. But if you're not sure on when is a good time to invest, and more importantly, where, that's where I think working with a financial advisor can make all the difference.
Absolutely.
So kind of thinking about it also from the standpoint of taxation. So you have so many different ways that you can invest. Do I keep it in the bank account? Should I leave it in the checking? Should I invest it in all stocks? Should I have bonds? Should it be in a Roth type of vehicle? Should it be in a taxable type of vehicle? Those decisions are hard to make without understanding how everything works together. And I think that's where definitely financial advisors can help figure that process out.
For sure. That's a really important question. You know, one of the first things I know we ask our clients when they ask us about investing money is what's their time horizon for those funds, right? Because how many times have we been asked in this, in a hot market and when there's a FOMO out there, fear of missing out, if they can get money invested and it might be something that in a year and a half they plan on buying a house with.
Exactly.
The risks in that short period of time in the market, to me, that risk outweighs the potential upside. But that's a really hard thing for investors who want that kind of instant gratification, want to be part of the market going up, up, and up, and not thinking about the risks those funds that they need in a short time period.
Absolutely. Because imagine if you are in that scenario where you're looking at the markets and you're seeing double-digit returns for the last few years, thinking, well, what if I take that down payment on the house, invest it, and I'll have a bigger down payment? Maybe I can avoid PMI, right? You can really start to skew your mindset, but then you get that short-term market correction, and that's the time when you can incidentally find the house of your dreams or the house that you can afford more likely in this kind of market, and it becomes a situation where, oh no, I don't have enough. Mm-hmm. So it's so important to know what type of investment you're selecting, not just from the risk standpoint, but also from the time horizon. Mm-hmm. That really, really, really comes into play. But delayed gratification definitely is a concept that is very, very powerful. And once you have a good grasp of it from a financial standpoint, from, I guess, math and finance standpoint, to understanding how risk feeds into all of this. You know, one of my favorite kind of investment charts that I've ever seen shows you how the time in the market works. So somebody who invests in a period of 1 year can have a pretty wild upside and a downside if you put the money all in stocks. Mm-hmm. Versus, to your point, if you put it in just a high yield money market and it's a short term need, that's a much safer, smarter way to go. You'll still get some return. You will most likely keep pace with inflation at the current rates, and you always got to pay attention to that. But you will not expose yourself to a potential downside risk that could prevent you from buying that home. And now you're back to the square one where your essential needs may not be met because you're not able to buy your shelter. Mm-hmm. That's a problem.
Well, despite all the evidence to the contrary out there on market timing, mm-hmm. you know, we still see so many investors think that they can time the market and get that money in there for a short time period and get it out before the market corrects again.
Yeah, there's a pretty common saying that we have, you know, you can't catch a falling knife. And that's the one that I always laugh about.
I haven't heard that one.
You haven't heard that one?
No.
So think about the market as being a falling knife. You just don't know where the bottom is. So if you try to time the market, one thing that investors, I think, miss oftentimes is the fact that the stock market and the economy do not move at the same pace. And I think looking back to COVID is probably, I think in 2020, is probably the best example I can think of. So by the time that we got that headline in the news coming out and saying we are officially in a recession. So what's a recession? That's two negative quarters of GDP growth. So you basically need 6 months of data for that recession headline to come out in the news. So thinking back to 2020, we started getting that market pullback happening around end of February. Come June and July, the market was back. But that's when we got that headline, we're officially in the recession. Mm-hmm. So if you're an investor and you're trying to time the market, you will likely exit at some point after the market took that initial dip. And you will likely wait to go back in and miss an entire recovery. So it's very, very difficult to try to time it because you have to be right twice. Mm-hmm. You have to go into cash before the dip and you have to go back in before the recovery. Next to impossible to do. So an investor who stayed in during COVID versus an investor who tried to time it, the first one will likely be much further ahead. And the second one will likely set themselves back potentially a couple of years mm-hmm. for the recovery. Depends on when you eventually got brave enough to go back in.
Right, right. Getting back in is actually the harder part of it, right?
Because you got burned.
You got burned. So let's talk about what are the better alternatives to trying to time the market.
I think this is where consistency. And, you know, we as humans are creatures of habit. We like habit. We don't like change. Change is hard. Nobody wants to do it. But if you start thinking about it from the standpoint of pay myself first, you get your paycheck. Let's assume that your needs are met and you're in a position where you have a 401k match. I think that's one of the easiest things to make sure that you don't leave money
free
off the
money.
Table.
Free Absolutely. Money.
So at least start there. And from there, make it where it's automated. Every time the paycheck comes out, every time you have money, make sure some money goes, as I like to say, for my older self, mm-hmm. right? So make sure you don't end up in a situation where you have to keep working. Because the thing with delaying that gratification is you put yourself in a position of financial freedom. And financial freedom is very, very powerful. This is where you can choose how you spend your time. Mm-hmm. You know, there's this really famous, this kind of this funny thing that I saw once where it said three levels of money, right? What are the three levels of money? The first level of money is where you can cut your own grass. And think about that. Okay. In this day and age, that means that you can actually go and have ability to buy your own home. Because a lot of people today can't afford to buy that first home. It's true. Very, very unaffordable. Second level of wealth is you don't have to cut your own grass anymore. Now you're so busy and your time is so valuable that you can actually afford to pay somebody else to cut your grass. And then what's the third level of wealth? What do you think?
I don't know.
It's actually you cut your own grass again. You know why? Because now you have enough money where you don't need to sell your time anymore.
I like that.
And you get to a point where you can choose to do what you want. Yeah. And if you like cutting your grass, taking care of your house, that is something you can actually end up doing. So if you think about it, delaying gratification can put you in that position as long as the behaviors are enforced and you continue on the path of paying yourself first and making sure you do it smartly. Mm-hmm. Putting it in the right place makes all the difference here, in my opinion.
I think that makes a huge difference. And oftentimes, you know, setting those habits to pay your future self, it doesn't take as much as people often think it is. You mm-hmm. know, sometimes our younger investors are like, well, I don't have $500 a month right now to save, so I'm just going to wait until I get to the point of where I have $500 a month. We can set up savings plans for $25 a month.
Exactly.
It's the habit of setting it up, getting it automated, and then working with an advisor who's going to help prompt you to increase that, you know, every time you get a little extra cash flow, you know, paying mm-hmm. yourself first before you put it in the vacation fund or buy that new car or whatever that mm-hmm. is. It doesn't take as much as people think it is to set that habit and really see the positive outcome that you're affecting.
100% correct. Just mm-hmm. start early, start on the habit of doing it. Once you build that habit, it will stick with you for life.
That's a really important habit.
It is.
All right, we're going to take another quick break and we'll be back with more.
Want to keep building wealth that aligns with your values? New episodes of Money Sense drop weekly. Subscribe now and continue learning how your money, your choices, and your life can work together.
So Nick, as we're thinking about, you know, how to set ourselves up for success mm-hmm. on the long term, our future selves on success, and delaying that gratification, talk to me a little bit about how diversification comes into play of helping us have that long-term mentality.
So now we dive in a little bit deeper, right? More along the lines of portfolio construction, how we are investing. So one thing you got to keep in mind with diversification is you have to avoid following the herd. So we've seen that with the dot-com crash, right? Right now, there's a lot of talk of, is this current AI a bubble, mm-hmm. right? That's a word that's being thrown out a lot. So back in 2000s, we had the longest bear market we've had, almost 3 years, when the dot-com crash happened. So the idea of being well-diversified, right? If you were well-diversified at that point, you probably still took a hit. But chances are you took a hit in a slightly lesser way. Mm-hmm. So diversification really is the idea where in different year, you have different sectors of the market or segments of the market do better than the others. So some year you may have the S&P 500, like right now, led by the tech stocks. They've done really, really well over the last 3 years. But for example, this year, they're slightly lagging behind and not every what they call the Magnificent Seven stock is going through the roof. While the earnings expectations are still high, it's not the same as what we saw over the last 3 years from the standpoint of the market performance. So now if you're in a well-diversified position, you have a little bit of internationals, you have a little bit of, you know, smaller size companies, mid-sized companies, and just being spread out across the market gives you those buffers where if you take a hit in one section like the dot-com crash of 2000s or if hypothetically we have an AI crash down the road, for whatever reason it may be, that you're not taking that full hit. Mm-hmm. So the idea of kind of making sure that the downside is something that you think about. And this is where, I guess, the idea of risk, how much risk can you tolerate, comes into play here. So
not something that you want to do is changing your risk tolerance all the time. So to mm-hmm. your point, right, oftentimes we get that question is, I want to be more aggressive when the market is flying yep. high. While in reality, that's really the time to potentially consider taking the foot off the gas.
Yes.
So it's always counterintuitive to think about that. And I think we see that most often with the clients, or they want to get more defensive after a market pullback.
Correct.
At that point, you're just locking in your losses inside the stock sector. So the idea of kind of having nice balance between stocks and bonds, the balance that actually fits your risk tolerance, where you're not going to lose sleep over a market downturn, which again is a certainty, market cycle will occur. So just to be able to understand how it all feeds into play and what are your potential downsides versus upsides, that's where it all kind of hits home.
Absolutely. You know, my clients have heard me, I'm sure, use this analogy a lot, but I often talk about being on a roller coaster. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the market ride. And the only way you get hurt on a roller coaster, in my mind, is if you jump off that roller coaster mid-ride.
Yep.
So the diversification and the risk tolerance is figuring out what type of roller coaster you can stay on, mm-hmm. where you're not going to be tempted to jump off. Because if you jump off mid-ride, you know, you get out of the market, poor timing. Getting back on is just that much harder, but that diversification can really make the difference.
You made me think of another analogy that I like to talk about. I always like to think about the market as a little guy walking up the mountain with a yo-yo in his hand. And he's playing with the yo-yo, and the yo-yo is going up and down, kind of the same as you turn on the market news mm-hmm. every day, and the market is up 1%, the market is down 1%. Mm-hmm. Could be a larger movement like we've seen over the last couple of months. But the idea is when you zoom out and you take a look and see what's the guy doing, he is walking up the mountain. And oftentimes, if you are that long-term investor who delays the gratification, when you look at your portfolio return of the last 10, 20, maybe 30 years, it looks like this. And you can draw a straight line, you know, kind of mm-hmm. going back to your slope of the line, to going back to math here.
Yeah.
But it will be an upward slope. So it's kind of interesting to think about it. So think of a little guy walking with a yo-yo, and just think of what he's doing. Mm-hmm. Don't look at the yo-yo.
Yeah.
Don't get distracted by the market news every day.
Well, that's a perfect example of what a well-thought-out, disciplined, long-term investment strategy looks like, is you're always going to have the yo-yo, the mm-hmm. ups and downs, but moving on that upward trajectory. Some of the other tools that I know clients often ask about, I get new questions from new prospects all the time of, you know, well, are you going to shift us, you know, to, are you going to shift us to cash when the market gets really bumpy? And a well thought out investment strategy, the answer is no. We figured out your risk tolerance, but rebalancing is key. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that a little bit earlier, and I was going to jump in and say, yes, we want to sell high, buy low, which right now we have a stock strategy that's really outperforming this year mm-hmm. that clients have really been like, oh, let's add more money to that. I'm like,
yes.
No, I'm actually going to take some money out of it.
It's always counterintuitive,
yep,
isn't it?
Yep. But taking that emotion out of it, I think, is one of the best things that an mm-hmm. investment advisor can do for their clients in that relationship, is to help clients take the emotion out of the investing.
Right.
It's really hard, but it's even for advisors, it's hard. Yep. And we know this. We know this stuff. But that's going to be what's most powerful over time, is staying in the market.
Couldn't agree more.
Good. Well, Nick, this has been wonderful chatting with you today. And I could go on and on talking about behavioral finance, because I feel like we've only
Scratch the surface.
That's the tip of the iceberg. So maybe we'll have to do another show together.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, thank you for joining us on Money Sense. I hope that our conversation today has been meaningful, and that we've made a difference in your personal and financial well-being. At Ellen Becker Investment Group, before we plan, before we advise, before we invest, we always listen. Have a great week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Money Sense, brought to you by Ellen Becker Investment Group. If you found today's conversation helpful, we encourage you to share it with a friend or family member, and be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts so you never miss an episode. At Ellen Becker Investment Group, we believe that education is the foundation of confident financial decisions. That's why we're proud to bring you insights from experienced professionals to help you build true wealth beyond just money. Please note, this podcast is intended for general informational purposes only and does not constitute personalized financial advice. Before making any financial decisions, we recommend consulting with a qualified advisor who understands your unique situation. For more resources, visit ellenbecker.com We'll be back soon with more insights to help you live with clarity and confidence.